You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are going to be joined by a Michigan native, Joe Wilson. Joe, how are we doing today?
Doing real well. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Summertime in Michigan, Kid Rock sang about it. Is it pretty cracked? I mean, is it all that it's cracked up to be? Is Michigan in the summertime pretty badass or what?
I mean, us locals really don't like to tell you people from outside of the state, but yeah, it's pretty sweet. Especially when you're going to northern Michigan. We're getting ready here. Let's see, a week from tomorrow, we're heading up. We always go up for 10 days camping in northern Michigan, right off from Lake Michigan. And yeah, the stories are true via Kid Rock, I can tell you that.
Okay. All right. Any past romances on those 10-day trips, like back in the day, like when you were, you know, a young whippersnapper and you go, you find true love for 10 days and then you leave and it's sad?
Well, my wife's home, Dan, so I don't want to get in trouble. But
there you go.
I mean,
there you go.
I started going up northern Michigan when a buddy of mine was working up there right out of college. Uh-huh. And I mean, definitely some, you know, nothing too elongated, but some summer flings and such. So yeah, really good memories. Really good memories up there.
There you go. Really good memories. That's a great answer. That's a great answer.
And if my wife is listening, none of them compare to the memories with her.
Exactly. I mean, that's another great answer. It's a valid answer. And I know exactly what you mean, man. Before we get into today's episode, though, we're going to cover, it's a BS section, but we're going to cover a specific topic that you reached out to me on. Before we do that, though, I got to say a thank you to all of the partners here at the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. In my opinion, I've been and I have generated this opinion about wasp archery and their broadheads over the course of like 15 years now. And so I've been using a variety of heads. One of my favorite is the three blade jackhammer. And I've been using that head and I've been killing deer with that broadhead for a very long time. Almost every deer that's on my wall, that's hanging on my wall, has been shot with a wasp broadhead. So go to wasparchery.com and I do have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off wasparchery.com. Vortex Optics, these guys are doing it all. And I love the brand. I love the people. The products are just the cherry on top, to be honest with you. Very high class products, high quality. They have the VIP warranty where if you bust it, break it, run over it with your truck, drop it in a lake, they will, you ship it to them. They ship it back to you with a replacement or a fixed product. So that's pretty badass. VortexOptics.com, spotting scopes, range finders, rifle scopes, red dots, of course, binoculars. VortexOptics.com. Go check them out. Code Blue Sense. I just got a box in the mail, Joe, the other day with a whole bunch of stuff from Code Blue. Scent elimination products like laundry detergent and sprays, real and synthetic deer urines. My favorite product that they have is the Rope-A-Dope Mock Scrape Kit. I pair that with a trail camera and I get a lot of pictures of deer kind of coming to investigate. So go to CodeBlueSense.com, enter the discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next on the list is Reveal Trail Cameras. They have the new Ultra out. That's a badass trail camera, dude. You scan the QR code, you connect it to the app. Obviously, you need batteries in it, but the features that come along with this new Ultra are really, really interesting based off of the old 3.0, the older, I hate to say old because it's just, it was a brand new camera last year, but the Ultra is just a step up from the new 3.0 versions. Badass camera from a badass company. Go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out all of the new cameras, the old 3.0s and the new Ultra and all the features that go along with that. Outside of that, my company, Full Sneak Gear, go check out fullsneakgear.com and buy a t-shirt. And that t-shirt, Joe, if you buy a t-shirt, that helps me go on hunting trips. So it's almost like one of those kids in Africa type deal where it's like for only the purchase of one t-shirt, you can help Dan Johnson go to South Dakota every year and kill a mule deer. So go support me.
And no offense to the kids. No offense to the kids in Africa, but yeah. I get a lot of enjoyment out of your Instagram stories when you go on those hunting trips. So that's where I would side on that.
There you go. Argument. I like that. I like that. A little entertainment.
Absolutely.
A little entertainment. Joe, Michigan, rate it from 1 to 10 on how awesome the hunting is up there.
Oh, man. It's all relative, right? Compared to how it was when I was growing up. Oh, I would say a 9, honestly.
So it's better now than it was.
Yes. And it is, but once again, it's all relative to me, right? So the property I grew up hunting, it's over 200 acres. On opening day of gun deer season when I was growing up, there were 15 guys on that property. And all you heard was gunshots all day. And after the first day of the season, you didn't see anything. Now, my brother has since purchased that property. And so now there's about 5 and it's managed property. So you know what I mean? And so it's like my experience is totally different. And I've got another property I hunt that it is low pressure. So for me personally, I think it's way better.
Yeah.
But I think it depends on who you ask. Now, I also hunt public land in northern Michigan. And even that I would say is better than it used to be. You know, so yeah, I'm very pro Michigan when it comes to hunting and fishing.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing to hear. You might be one of the first people to say it's gotten better. Well, it's gotten a little better because of some specific circumstances, but the public land that you hunt in northern Michigan, is that in one of those APR zones?
It is. Yep. Northwest Lower Michigan. And it's so my parents have some property up there. It's like 68 acres, but to be honest with you, I think I've hunted it once because it's surrounded by national forest. I just hunt that because, you know, like I said, I've got good land to hunt down in southern Michigan. I like going up there just to be able to wander.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so that's a very optimistic view on Michigan. And you guys, you have the opportunity to reduce a little pressure and manage a deer. Have you noticed when you did that, you know, like when it went from 15 to 5 guys who hunt the property, did you notice, and it was managed, did you notice an increase in not only quantity, but quality as well of the deer?
Yes, but it was gradual. It's like I said, for southern Michigan, 200 and some acres, it's a big chunk. Don't get me wrong. But every single neighbor around it hunts and the whole neighborhood hunts. I mean, that, you know, it's common. So you know, progress was slow. The other thing is, you know, we grew up with stereotypical Michigan fashion of, you know, you shoot what you saw. If it had antlers, you shot it, you know. And then even if it, we even got to shooting does. I mean, we just like to eat venison in my family. So it was gradual in the sense of not only because there was still pressure around us, but we had to kind of understand how to shift our mindsets. Because we were like, okay, now we're gonna let the little bucks go, which we were really good at that right away. We didn't have any problems. But as anyone who's ever tried to target older deer, especially in highly pressured areas, knows, you have to completely change your tactics too. You can't just change your mindset of I'm only gonna shoot the bigger bucks.
Right, right. And I'm guessing when you guys made the decision as a team of people to start passing forkies and, you know, spikes and the buck, that it maybe took a year to get to that stage where now you can actually have a conversation of whether or not something is potentially a shooter.
Yeah, I can still remember. So my brothers bought that property. I'd have to think hard there. It's been a while. I think it's about 17 years. I could still remember the first year. Me, because my brother bought it, so he's owner, but he did take input from us. And I can remember having an argument because I wanted to shoot a 2.5-year-old buck because it was the biggest buck I'd seen at that point. And him just telling me, no, like, I don't want you to do that. And, you know, basically, if you do, it's almost like I'd be on hunting probation. So, yes, it was, you know, it's like the biggest buck you've ever seen is the biggest buck you've ever seen. It could be a 2-year-old. It could be a 5-year-old. So there was definitely a shift there. And it took quite a few years to understand. To be honest, I didn't even see a 3.5-year-old on the hoof for probably 5 years, even after that change.
Yeah.
And and then when you finally saw it, it was like the light bulb went off, like, oh, that's what a 3-year-old looks like.
Yeah. And that's what that exact situation or scenario that you went through. Now try to convince an entire state of people to go through something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And so you maybe regrettably did it. Or not regrettably, what's that word that I'm looking for, where you did it, but only because you were forced to do it. But then you saw the outcome of what your brothers were trying to accomplish. And then you're like, okay, all right, I got it. And I now every guy I've ever had from Michigan has said something bad about the way Michigan handles their deer herd. And so to hear a story like this, maybe someone from Michigan will go, okay, all right, maybe I need to pass that spike this year, or maybe I need to pass that four-corned or basket rack 6 or something like that. And in order to get what I truly want, and that's an older age class of deer. I don't know.
No, I think you're spot on. And I was definitely more on board. So I have 3 brothers and my dad, and we had 2 other guys. So I mean, I guess there was more people than I realized initially. And it's kind of dwindled down to the point where now, honestly, I'm pretty much the only one that bow hunts it. Some other guys do, but not a lot.
Yeah.
So that's changed things. But yes, I would tell, if you're in Michigan and you have the traditional mindset of like, if I don't shoot it, the neighbor will. I only have this tiny little parcel. I've got limited time, whatever it may be. I'm telling you it's possible, because I also hunt a couple of parcels that are right next to me, my neighbors. One's 10 acres, the other's 30 acres, but he's got cattle and stuff. It's probably 15 acres of huntable property, small parcels. I have seen some really nice bucks here in the last, 5 years over there, just because I'm passing, but also the neighborhood is. And I think that everybody knows that, but it bears repeating of, you have to get everybody on board, especially when you've got 10, 20 acre parcels in Michigan you're hunting. But it is possible. I can tell you it is. And I can tell you I think it was from when my brother bought it to when I finally shot a 3-year-old, it was probably 8 years. And we all know 8 years is a long freaking time, especially when you're devoting, you know, rutcations to sitting in a tree stand for long hours. But I'm telling you, the payoff is worth it. I know it's easy for me to say that, but I'm telling you, that feeling when you finally break through, it's hard to describe. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And it not only is the farm that you hunt, but the neighbors seem to be kind of on board too.
Yes. Yes. Well, no, I take that back. At my brother's place, yes and no. We know for a fact some of the neighbors are shooting 2.5-year-olds, which we wish they would pass, but we're not one of those that are going to look down upon them. It's like, hey, good for you guys. It's your property. Yep. Do what
that's
you want.
That's what you want.
That's what you want. Go for it. I mean, if you're happy with it. I would say, all the ones I can think of, they're shooting 2.5-year-olds. So they're definitely not on board. I would say we have learned better how to hunt the property to ensure that, especially the bucks, but really to a large extent, you got to keep the does on there too, to keep from bumping them off. You know, just like entry and exit routes, not over hunting spots. For me, honestly, I've learned, like a lot of guys, that you can hunt real early. I give the woods a break all the way till the end of October. I have just found, I take that back, I'll hunt edges to shoot does, but I don't go into the core spots. Not till like the last week of October or something to tell me to do something different. You just got to hunt smart.
Yeah.
Because,
hey man,
because
I just had a conversation. Yeah, I just had a conversation with a guy about that a couple days ago, where like October for me is a kids month where I'm coaching, I'm doing sporting stuff. I have learned that if I hold off on October and go in late October, maybe one or two surgical strikes, but that's it, based off of like what my cell cams are telling me, or if a rando shows up at some point. But outside of that, man, I just wait for the good times and reduce the pressure on the farms so that I'm personally not the pressure, and sit back and wait for the best time of year. And that's that November timeframe. And if you do that, whether it's by choice or if it's just because I can't because of my schedule, then I've just had better success doing that.
Yeah. And that's funny you mentioned. I was just thinking back. I think the first year that it really hit home for me was a situation like you alluded to, where it was like, I was forced to not hunt. I was just too busy. I had stuff going on and I had young kids. And so I didn't even set foot in the woods. And it was like my first sit, I think, was November 3rd at my neighbor's property. I bet you I saw 6 bucks that morning. It was amazing because nobody had been back there.
Yep. Yep. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yep. Cool, man. I don't know why this popped up, but I'm going to ask anyway. What's the turkey situation in Michigan? Good?
So I did not grow up hunting turkeys. Turkeys to us were just this like nuisance that when you were deer hunting, they would fly up into the trees at night and cause a racket, or you would bust them off the roost. I started turkey hunting probably 9 years ago, and I fell in love. My gosh, is it turkey hunt fun? I wish someone would introduce me sooner. So the first year I started, and I was kind of trying to figure it out, I've never hunted turkeys, it was amazing. I saw so many stinking big toms that I couldn't get to commit. It's dwindled off a little bit, but I mean, shoot, this year I hunted 2 days, and the second day I called in, I think, 4 different toms. So it's still good. I think it's very good. But I think 10 years ago, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, I can get on board with that in Iowa, man. It's not like I want to have a conversation about turkey. It just popped into my head.
Like, I'll talk turkeys, man. I have fallen in love with hunting turkeys. To me, there's a lot of like simple pleasures I get from hunting. But near the top of the list is when you get in early and you're sitting there and it's getting light. And, you know, that anticipation of are we going to hear anything? And then when they start firing off on the roost, man. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like that.
That does get a guy fired up. I'll be honest. Yes, it does. Okay. One of the reasons that you're here today is because you sent me an Instagram message or a DM on Instagram, and you were talking, you were talking a little bit about CWD. Okay. Now I want basically you to tell me or tell us why you reached out about CWD. Why is it important? Why is this a topic that is kind of rattling around in your brain? And we'll just kind of shoot from the hip from there.
That's a very deep question. I'll try to be as succinct as possible, because I think when you ask me, like, why is it a big deal for you, there's a story there, right?
Yep.
I'll preface this by saying, I understand CWD is a very contentious topic. I'm not coming on here to try to ruffle anybody's feathers. And I hope that comes across as like, hey, this is just someone who cares about deer hunting a lot. It's probably my biggest passion in life. And that's where a lot of this is coming from. So my personal situation, Southern Michigan, 2015, DNR says, hey, we found CWD in the free range deer herd. And every hunter I talked to, we were all like, what does this mean? You know, it was just kind of this like, is this going to be a threat to like what we all love type deal? Mm-hmm. The DNR went they put a ton of funding into testing. They start sharpshooting deer, which was not very popular. They do all these things for a few years, right? It's a huge topic. I mean, it's in all the local newspapers. And then it just kind of falls off. So for me personally, it's starting in 2015, I've gotten every single deer I've shot tested. And you say, why? Well, A, I just kind of wanted to know, just curiosity standpoint, because where they found it wasn't close, but it wasn't far. I want to say it was probably maybe an hour away from where we were.
Yeah.
And I've always just kind of kept an eye on it because it was just something I was always kind of leery of. And I'll get into why in a little bit. But so anyway, every single deer. There was years where it was super easy to test. There was a store that's literally 3 miles down the road from my house that had a drop box. You chop your head off, you throw it in a basket. They send you the results 2 weeks later. Sweet. There's other years that they didn't even offer testing for us at all. So I had to send my lymph nodes all the way to Wisconsin, but it was just important to me. So fast forward to last year, this buck shows up. I actually didn't even have him on trail cameras. It was in late October. I'm sitting in a swamp. All of a sudden I see a very tall, nice frame buck. Holy cow. And now I thought it was the buck I was after and it wasn't, but he kind of skirted me. Well, shoot forward a week later, he comes into 15 yards. He's a very tall, main 6-point rack with a little crab claw. He had 12-inch G2s. Really nice buck. So
yep.
Shot him. Super ecstatic, man. It was awesome. I actually kind of got the hunt on film. Just so thankful, man. It was just one of those things I'll never forget. Deer looked completely normal. I got him out. You know, I send my results in like normal. Well, then, like I said, 2 to 3 weeks later, I get the results, and it's a positive deer. And so obviously it was just like, holy crap. I should mention that in my county, according to the DNR numbers, in the last 9 years, there were 2 deer that tested positive out of all of the deer that they said they had tested. So I was like, I wasn't even expecting this. It was kind of a gut punch, to be honest. And so that has led me down this path of trying to understand this disease more, how it might impact us, and how I can kind of inform other people of what I have heard, because I'm not a CWD expert, but I have been able to talk to a lot of people that I think are.
Yeah. So I got to ask the question, you know, you shoot the deer, you send it off for testing, the parts that need to be tested anyway, and then you forget about it for like 3 weeks. 3 weeks goes by, you get something in the mail, and it says you have killed a CWD positive deer. Like, from just a hunter standpoint, what goes through your head at that point?
Oh crap was the first thing. So like I said, I was already leery of the disease. Just to be straightforward, people can hate me if they want. It's leery. And I guess I should bear mention why. So my father has Parkinson's disease. He's had it for 12 years. That's a neurological condition.
Yep.
Well, people will point out, well, that's kind of different than CWD. I get it. But it is a terrible disease, right? To be able to watch someone you love have to deal with it. Sorry. But these neurological conditions, man, I'm just extremely leery of. I also had a grandma who had Alzheimer's. Yep. And so people can tell me all day long, there has been no known connection between deer and humans. People have eaten it and stuff. You know, it's like, I get it, guys. I do. They're still trying to understand these neurological conditions. And I should also mention that my father grew up on a farm. And they're starting to understand after all these years that people who are near pesticides seem to have a higher risk of things like Parkinson's. So I look at something like CWD, and for just, this is me personally, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but I'm like, I'm not gonna put myself at risk of that. Just because I know people have eaten it and they'll say, hey, I haven't seen any effects. I get it, guys. I do. We don't know what's going to happen down the line. There's just no way to know. So anyway, sorry to go off there. But so when I shot it, it was like, oh, crap. And then it was like, I processed my own deer and I pushed them, put them in their own separate freezer until I get the positive result. It's just something I've always done. Mm-hmm. So immediately I'm like, okay, well, thank God I had that meat separated out and marked. But I think the best way I can explain it, because I've done a lot of hard thinking about, like, you know, how I reacted to it. It was almost like, I don't know if it's like the grieving process, but initially it was like shock, like what? And then of course you're skeptical. I ended up calling the lab and like, you guys sure about this? Like, what's the chances this is a false positive? And they were like, we just don't see false positives. The way they test, it's extreme.
Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Accurate. So I was like, okay. There was sort of a state of depression for a couple weeks because I just didn't know. Like, okay, what's this going to mean? Does this mean this thing's going to, you know, be killing off all these deer? I mean, what does it mean? And eventually got to that acceptance stage of like, okay, it's not the end of the world. And then I think what quickly followed was I just wanted to inform more people. Because I don't even think people realize. I know they don't, because I talked to a lot of people, that the disease was actually in the area. Because like I said, the numbers didn't tell you that. So that was essentially kind of how I've gone with it. And ever since then, it's just been a big push. And that's why I came on here.
Yeah.
I just want people to kind of understand it's out there and understand, you know, what's the potential effects of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. So my grandpa had Parkinson's. My other grandpa had Alzheimer's. Well, it was like my one grandpa, they found Parkinson's in him. And then, you know, through Parkinson's and through being an Iowa farmer his entire life, and you mentioned the pesticides and the fertilizers, that like back when he started farming, dude, there was no safety precautions on any of that stuff. These guys were mixing like poisonous chemicals with their hands, breathing it in every single day, right? Or well, not every day, but you get it. And so my other grandpa had Alzheimer's and dementia. So both of them suffered from what we're thinking was the pesticides and all that stuff over a long period of time created some of these things, right? So these disorders, which
we're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands for the super athletic stuff, like running gear for cruising up the trail.
Woo!
And the super athlete-ish stuff, like fishing gear for chilling by the creek. Nice cast. Fitness apparel to push for higher reps. You got this. And golf balls priced so you can afford to lose one. Or a few. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athlete-ish, Sierra's got it.
How, like, here's the other thing. I'm gonna get back to CWD, but I'm the guy who talks about whatever's on my mind at the moment. And that is these pesticides that are being sprayed on the stuff that the animals eat, right? I don't care if it's beef, because beef are eating the grass, there's wind drift, there's whatever, you know, you go take it down whatever road, The deer are different after eating some of this stuff, right? I mean, they have to be. They're essentially digesting poison throughout their entire life if they're eating agriculture, like with GMOs and because I have seen, I don't know about you, but I've seen a chemical spray truck come in, spray a field, and later that night, deer come to the field and eat the plants that are in the field. So I don't know. Anyway, that's just me thinking out loud. CWD, though, the next question I have for you is, How many deer since 2015 have you got a positive result on in that area?
One last year.
Okay. So in the course of roughly 10 years, two positive tests, right?
No, it's the same one. I'm saying the one last year is the only one I've had in 9 years.
Okay. Okay. So from 2015, so when you started, to today, one CWD. How many other, like through tracking or you know, you following along, how many other CWD deer in your area or maybe neighbors' farms or anybody else that is, have found positive tests?
It's an interesting question, Dan. So here's the thing. Nobody's testing.
Okay.
I have found, so I got three brothers. We test all of our deer. We've got some buddies who just started in the last couple of years. They are the only people I know of that are testing. I did find a neighbor. So like I said, two parcels that are about, I'd say as the crow flies, 12 miles apart.
Okay.
So that's my brother's property. Now where I live, I've got one neighbor who had heard about my deer because, like I said, I was kind of letting everybody know, hey, I shot this deer, and he kind of caught wind of it, and he said that he'd been testing his. And, you know, I talked to a fair amount of people. Those are the only people I know of that are even testing their deer for this.
Okay. And but you're still the only one.
Yeah, that I know
in
of.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So you just kind of alluded there as well to you're not taking any risks. So your process, I'm assuming, is you kill a deer, you clean it just like normal, and then you separate the meat, you wait for the test results, and then you decide whether or not to eat it?
Correct. Yeah, you nailed it. That's exactly right. I separate out the main muscle groups, process it myself, I'll put it in gallon Ziplocs, label it, you know, date, what was it, you know, so it'd be like, you know, shoot a fair amount of doe. So it'd be like, you know, shot on 12/23 doe. And that way I know. And I've actually gotten in the habit of, because when you submit your result, you have to submit what tag it came from. So I'll write like the last three digits of the tag.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So what is your, like, you got guys out there, like the hunting community is torn about this. Like, guys like me, I've never tested my deer. I still eat deer meat. I personally am like, well, nobody, I've never seen a sick or dead deer. Usually I'm thinking that if I find a dead deer, it's a shotgun kill or it got like EHD. I've seen a couple, maybe EHD kills throughout the course of the last 20 years or something like that. I don't test. Like, if you were trying to convince me to test my deer, every deer that I shot, what would you tell me?
I would tell you that if you were finding dead deer, if you were seeing a lot of emaciated deer, it's kind of too late. And so that's where I think we're at a pivotal point in Southern Michigan. And I don't know a whole lot about Iowa. You can fill me in on that, but I don't think you guys are too bad. But, you know, I look towards, what does the future look like? I look to the state of Wisconsin because they've had this longer than we have. And you look at what's going on in some areas there. And I've talked to a couple of biologists over there that are extremely helpful because I was telling them, here's my situation. What can I do? And so, I mean, they've got adult doe populations in certain areas, guys, because some guys will say, that's not the case where I'm at. Certain areas of Wisconsin. Adult does have 30% of the does have CWD and over 50% of the adult bucks have it. And so you look at areas like that, they're finding all sorts of dead deer, right? Wisconsin just put out a very well done tracking survey. So I think it was 5 years, they collared over 1,000 deer in these hard hit areas, as well as they were tracking predators because they wanted to track, okay, well, how does this actually work? When the deer gets it, how long does it take for them to die? Do they actually die from CWD or are there other things? And the results show that it's about a 1.5 to 2 year incubation period before they actually pass away. But the conclusion was that it actually brings down deer numbers and it brings down the age structure of the herd, which makes sense. Like, so for example, and this is why I think guys like you should be concerned about this. You love targeting those older age class bucks, right? 5.5, 6.5, man, isn't awesome. Well, what if those bucks can't get there because they're contracting CWD at 2.5 and 3.5 or even 1.5, and they got 1.5 to 2 years and they're dead. So just because you're not seeing it doesn't mean it's not there. And the thing is, it's progressive. So the disease is 100% fatal and extremely contagious. So like in my area, they're like, well, you've only shot one deer. It's like, it starts with one, but the way it's spread with these prions that come out of saliva and feces and nose-to-nose contact, these prions, they aren't even sure how long they can last. They just know it's a long time. So now that there's one, you start to think about exponential growth, and it's just going to start to climb. And so that's why I think people at least should be aware of it. Now, am I going to harp on people like you that are like, I'm not going to test or whatever? It's like, no, like, I'm not that guy. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But I do think people need to at least understand the facts. And sometimes the information they're getting from other people is construed in a way that's just, it's not the truth.
Give me an example of that.
Oh, man. Oh, Uncle Ted Nugent, he's broadly proclaimed a lot that not a single deer has died from CWD. Uncle Ted, I hate to tell you, go talk to a biologist in Wisconsin. They will show you countless examples. I mean, they're all over the place. Trying to think of some of the other big ones. The one that kind of bugs me is just people say, well, you just cook your meat well done. It's not how it works, guys. These prions that carry the disease, they're shown to persist over 1,000 degrees. So if you want to cook your meat to over 1,000 degrees, there's probably got a whole lot left to eat. Then that's, you know, it's going to go. And, I mean, those are the two off the top of my head, but there's just a lot of misinformation out there. Oh, the other one is, you know, that Dr. Deer, his big thing is it doesn't affect the deer herd. It doesn't affect the deer herd. Well, I know it's only one study, and I'll say like, hey, they need to research this more, but the early results are showing, no, it's affecting the deer herd. And I think that's the other thing is stewards and conservationists, I think you always need to be thinking about the health of the deer herd. At least I do. And it's like, okay, if you say like, it's not going to affect humans, not at all. Okay. What about the deer though? Like, is it killing off deer? Is it making them suffer? Is that something we're okay with?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very unique topic for me, just because I understand what CWD could do, like example in Wisconsin. Okay. And I want to be that guy who gets all the answers. Right. And so I think a lot of people are pissed that the only thing that we know now what to do with CWD deer is just execute them, basically shooting, you know, like they're shooting them all off. And then, well, what happens when you have a disease ridden area? You shoot them all off. But the surrounding area has positives too. And then they just come back into the area. And now, I mean, it's not like deer just appear that are CWD free. It's almost like you would have to wipe everything out and then bring a brand new CWD free herd in from somewhere else and do that. And so, I don't know if the execute, like I'm, do you know any information about if that actually works? Like, did CW, like Wisconsin, for example, a couple of their counties went in and they shot everything that they could possibly see. It's open season, all deer, shoot them dead, see what happens as far as what they come back from that. Now, that happened several years ago. Do you know any information about, did it come back stronger or did it come back CWD, less CWD in deer?
Yeah. So like I said, keep in mind, I'm just regurgitating what I've talked to other people about. So it's a very interesting, I think it's probably the most important thing to discuss with other hunters, because that's what happened in Michigan when it first got there. Very unpopular. And I don't blame them, man, because as you said, to kind of just answer your question, everything I've read is it just hasn't worked in all these areas. They've tried to do it, and you can poke holes in it and say, well, that's because not everybody was on board. But here's the thing I mentioned about these prions. They can subsist in the soil for years and years. So in your example, you wipe the deer out and you bring in a fresh herd that's all clean. Those prions are still there. So my personal take, this is just me talking, is okay. The disease is here. I've accepted it. It's probably always going to be here. What can we do to at least lessen the impact? And I think that's the better question of, does killing everything work? Well, it's like, well, no, I think we all can agree it's not. But it's like, can we make a dent? And like I said, we're at a very pivotal point where it's like, it's not super prevalent here. What can we do to lessen the impact? And I think the obvious answer is you gotta bring down the deer herd. Now, once again, you say that and a lot of people bristle up, I really don't see that many deer. It's like, I get it. But when I talked to the Wisconsin guy, he said the only thing they've really seen that has lessened the impact was when they did earn a buck in certain counties over there where, you know, you had to shoot a doe in order to get the buck tag. And it was extremely unpopular, but he's like, from a biological perspective, it did work. And he said, ever since they've gotten rid of that, the disease has ramped up.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. And let me also say, because this is what I got when I told people tested positive, everybody kept telling me, oh, DNR is going to be coming in, shooting all your deer. Watch out. I didn't get a single phone call, an email. I got nothing from the DNR. I actually had to reach out to them just to be like, okay, what does this mean? You know? And so that's just not the case, guys. I'm telling you,
firsthand
experience. It happened to me. I don't want to say they don't care, but I think they've learned from their mistakes and they're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. Okay. So you're fairly familiar, you know, with people in your family having neurological disorders or whatever. Have you done any crazy research independently about, like, maybe let's say the prion gets in to a deer, it's called CWD, but the prion gets into a human, it's not CWD. It turns into something else per se, right? Like, I don't know. We don't call it CWD because humans don't get CWD. They get something else, right? So when you do your, like, because officially, technically, there's been no reported cases of CWD in humans. According to the studies, when I've talked to the biologist on my end, the only time that there has been a CWD positive transition from animal, from a deer to it was a primate, and it was force-fed excrement. It was force-fed deer poop. And that is the only time that they have found, and it was like maybe even a one-off type scenario. I don't even think it was repeated. I'm not 100% sure on that. Do your own research. But I know that that's been the transfer. There's only been that type of transfer. So now most humans aren't eating the snout. Most humans aren't eating excrement. Most humans are eating just the meat that is within the deer. Now, I wish I had a biologist here where I could ask this question. Is CWD in the muscle tissue of the deer? Or is it just in the excrement, the saliva, the mouth of the deer? And also, like, because, I mean, if it's not in the meat, well, then we're not eating it. I know it's positive from the tests in the area that we do, but are the prions in the muscle tissue in which we eat? That'd be something I would want to know.
Well, like I said, I've talked to biologists. I've talked to doctors who study these kind of diseases. I'm the kind of person that when I get a hold of something, man, it becomes my life. My wife can tell you she forbid me from talking about CWD for the 2 months after, just because I research, I call, like, because I realize this, like, I can't just go online for 15 minutes and I'm an expert. And like I said, I'm still not an expert, but I was like, I want to talk to the guys that have been studying this for 20, 30 years. And so I can tell you from the doctor I talked to at the Michigan State Veterinary Diagnostic Lab, I was asking him all these questions. And I was like asking him about like the cape, the antlers. It's a secondhand information. So like you said, do your own research. I like that line. He said the prions are everywhere. Now,
okay,
they're most densely in the neurological system, right? That's where they say like, stay away from the brain, the spinal cord, all those things. They're still in all the other parts of the body. Like I said, they're proteins, right? So they're definitely in the meat, but they're not as concentrated as other parts of the body is what I was told.
Gotcha. Okay. So you don't eat deer meat that it comes from your CWD positive deer. You didn't eat that deer.
Yes. And I know that ruffles people's feathers, but like I said, at least respect my reasons for it. I'm not just guy that's, I don't want to eat it. When I've seen firsthand neurological conditions and stuff, to me, it's just not worth the risk.
Yeah. Well, you're going through a process, right? Where you're putting the deer in a deep freeze, you're waiting for the results, and then you're eating it after it comes back negative. There are people out there who just shoot the deer and don't eat it. Right. And so they're, I know a couple guys that are like, I'm not even taking a risk. I still deer hunt. And actually they have big, highly managed farms where they are doing like the hush program where they'll shoot all the deer so that they can manage their farms. They don't eat the meat themselves, but they'll turn it in to somebody else. So imagine a guy who owns thousands of acres and manages deer for the big antlers and then doesn't eat any of the meat. That seems crazy to me, but he also has that fear of CWD the dude doesn't even like deer meat. And so he donates the meat and doesn't eat any of it, which is crazy to me. So, but I understand and I respect the decision for a person not to eat a CWD positive deer. I'm not that guy quite yet. I haven't seen it. I guess if there was more information out about it, and maybe a warning from, some wildlife biologist out there is like, you should not do it. And here's why, because we have found that it could potentially do this. I guess I hope I'm not the first guy to ever get CWD, but at the same time, I don't want to, like, I don't think I'm going to stop eating deer meat because of it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to that fear and that's my sink thing. In it's quite like, yet.
I'm not going to stop hunting, right? I'm still going to eat deer meat. I'm just going to do it with a small sense of caution about, is the deer tested positive for CWD? I think that's all it is. And I think, we should bear mentioning is like all these people have said, there's been no known connection. There does seem to be some sort of a barrier. But I think we all understand that diseases can mutate. And I'm not trying to be some doomsday guy. It's going to mutate. It's going to kill us all. It's not my true feelings about it. And like I said, I've spent probably too much time at this point trying to understand this thing. But the people who study it, they always just say, it's like, it is possible, guys. And in fact, when you talk about there's a human form, it's called Creutzfeldt-Jakobsen's disease. That's the human form of CWD. And we also all know about mad cow. Mad cow is in the same family of disease, transmissible spongiform encephalopathy. I know you're like, quit sounding like a nerd. That's just a scientific term of it.
Yep.
So mad cow would transmit it to humans. It's the same prion type disease. So it's possible, right? And that for me is enough. Now for you, it might not be. That's fine. But like I said, it's like, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but just at least understand the facts and the possibilities.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about, I like talking about best case scenario, worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. With CWD. CWD is here. So that has to stay constant throughout this best and worst case scenario. Worst case scenario, it makes the jump from humans and all deer hunters die. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they find out that it can jump and they have facts that it can jump, or maybe the jump causes something different other than CWD and it's negative for humans to consume deer meat. I look at that as maybe like a worst case scenario.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. And like I said, I have an analytical mind by nature. I ruminate on stuff. And I've thought about this probably once again too much. And I think all it's going to take is if we find one, which is, I come from a background in like data science, statistics. It's like one person, that's all it's going to take though, man. There's going to be so many people that are going to stop hunting. It's going to stop eating venison. It'll be bad.
I can see worst case scenario, the farming groups, it makes the jump. CWD makes the jump from deer to human, and then all the farm insurance companies are going to be like, well, if it made the jump to that, it's going to make the jump to livestock potentially on any type of free ranging cow or whatever. And then the white-tailed deer becomes a threat in farm country, and they just, it's a green light on whitetails at that point. You see them, you shoot them. They're like, I see that being a worst case scenario.
Yeah, that'd be really bad.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think that's gonna happen. Hopefully, you know what I mean. It's like you put all these different scenarios in front of you, and you say, okay, what's the probability of that happening, right? You know, that one's probably not great. The other thing, I actually did ask the biologist of like, okay, so this could this thing, it can't transmit to humans right now. Makes me don't think. What about like cows? What about dogs? He did say that there seems to be kind of a biological barrier from that happening. But once again, not impossible. It's not impossible.
Yeah. As of right now, it's not doing it. The disease
it's not
is
doing
not,
it. It's not likely to, but that's where... Yeah, there's so many unlikely things that have happened that people never thought they would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I work in finance, right? So the one everybody points to is 2008, right? I think for an example, did anyone ever believe that the housing market was going to crash like it did?
Right.
And it did. Now, if you were to ask, what are the chances of that happening again? Oh, they're really, really low. But could it happen? Yeah, it absolutely could happen again.
Yep. Yeah, worst case scenario, you know, your mind can wander whatever direction it wants to find the worst possible case of CWD going on. Best case scenario, like CWD exists, it is a threat to deer, but what is the best case scenario now for people like you yourself who are concerned with CWD?
Well, I do have hope. Because, you know, things like rabies, you know, that was a disease transmitted by animals that they were able to kind of find vaccinations for or whatever. I do have hope that science or maybe even nature can find a cure for this. So I just want to throw that out there. I think that's a possibility. I think it's going to be tough. But, you know, especially on the human side, if we can get some funding and stuff, who knows? Now, for me personally, I look at this thing and, yeah, what is best case scenario? I think best case scenario is people take it serious. People test their deer, so at least we have data points because people aren't testing their deer right now. We have terrible data because we have no idea where this thing is. Test your deer, understand where it's at, and we lower the deer population to a point where it's like, yeah, it's going to spread, but it's not going to spread like wildfire. And so it's something we have to deal with, but it's to the point where it's like occasionally you shoot a deer with it. You know, you talk to people in Wisconsin. I don't know if you follow like the meat eater guys, but like Doug Duren, I've talked to him briefly and then had a really long conversation with Pat Durkin. I mean, it's like half the deer they're shooting on some of those properties are testing positive. So I believe that if we can keep populations at more of a manageable level, that maybe we can keep it at, I don't know what the number is. Is it 10%? Something where it's like, yeah, it's kind of a nuisance, but it's not so bad.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's a very weird disease when half the people don't even care about it and the other half know about it. Like there's only a very small percentage of people who are like extremely concerned that CWD is just it's like the worst, you know, I'll just say concerned about it. They're extremely concerned about it. I'm trying to think of, you know, kill off all the deer, people are going to be pissed. There's no deer to hunt. Don't kill off the deer, and CWD red runs rampant across the landscape. I'm not sure that there is a solvable problem. The problem can be solved unless you find a way to eradicate every whitetail in an area, because the way that things work in a scenario like this is, in my opinion, you know, like let's look at the zombie movies, for example. How do you stop a zombie outbreak? You blow up an entire city, right? You find it and you got to eradicate whatever it is that's turning people like the movie World War Z or, you know, whatever, name the zombie movie, and the federal government comes in and just blows up the entire city to stop the spread of whatever disease that is killing all these people and turning them into zombies. And so I see there being an absolutist type of, if it becomes so bad, I mean, it there's only one way to solve the problem, and that's to get rid of all the deer, right? And so from a conservation standpoint, that's probably not the answer, but at like men, when humans get involved, the landscape changes, right? When nature, for the most part, over the course of could be 1 year, it could be a million years. Nature tends to correct itself.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so I am kind of a believer that nature will find a equilibrium at some point, and the gene over a course of generations of deer, one deer out there, he will become immune to it. Or it's like, there's certain diseases where, hey, I have this disease, but because of my genetics, I am immune to it, right? Where I have it, but it doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form. You know, I'm going to live out a long, healthy life. Yes, I test positive for it, but I'm going to live a long, healthy life. My guess is that nature is ultimately going to win in the end when there is the deer herd, and this is an optimistic view of it, the deer herd protects itself through genetics, if that makes sense. Or we find a cure for it, and we juice it into 1,000 deer, and they like an antidote, I guess you would say, or a vaccine of sorts that would kill it or prevent transmission. And then that gene mutation or whatever you want to do then spreads to all the other deer in the area. And now the problem is solved. So that's the optimistic point of view that I have for what's going to happen.
Eczema is unpredictable, but you can flare less with Ebglyss, a once-monthly treatment for moderate to severe eczema. After an initial four-month or longer dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks, and most of those people maintained skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Yeah, it reminds me of Jurassic Park. And what's the guy's squirrely guy? He says, nature finds a way.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you. And that's what I'm saying is that, like... And once again, I realize it's a contentious topic. I firmly believe in this area, we have way too many deer. And DNR agrees with me. Maybe some of the hunters don't. But I would tell anybody who disagrees with that point, in March and April, when there's not any foliage yet, but the deer are starting to, you know, weather's warming up, they're starting to be a little more active, drive around. Take a look at how many deer in these fields. It's insane. Yeah. I mean, you'll see 100 deer in a field. And people may say, well, yeah, they're grouped up. Okay, drive a quarter mile down the field, and then you see another 40. I mean, it's just... there's way too many. There are way too many deer. And you're right. Nature takes care of that. And that's why we've seen like these EHD outbreaks. They're so detrimental. It's because we have way too many deer. So they just spread like crazy. And I think CWD is the same way, just like you mentioned, where if we can keep the carrying capacity at a reasonable number, it's still going to have an effect. Like, it's not going anywhere, but it's not going to be detrimental like I think it could be.
Or you could just introduce wolves into your area and see how that flies. That's a joke, people. Okay, that's a joke. That's a joke before people just drive their cars into embankments. That's a joke, all right?
Yeah, you want to talk about something that's even more contentious in Michigan. Yeah, bring up wolves with hunters. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yep. But I'll tell you what, man, I'm interested to see what happens because the hot... usually what happens in this world is it's a hot topic and then CWD is kind of honestly faded away in the national social realm, where it's not a buzzword as what it used to be. It's not as hot of a topic as it used to be. So I'm curious when that is going to start popping back up again, if it does pop back up, or are hunters kind of immune to it now, where it's just like if it's here, it's here. If it it's only it's only a buzzword if people care about it, you know, right? Like some people think the Kardashians are awesome. You say the name Kardashian, I don't give a shit, right? And so that's what I'm saying, is like some people value certain things differently than others. But if the majority doesn't value CWD the way that Joe Wilson in Michigan values CWD, well, then it's only an issue to Joe Wilson. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm interested to see what the next, you know, what the next couple years look like, and if CWD makes a giant, I guess not a comeback, but like a, if whether it becomes popular in the social constructs of hunters.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And that's what I'm trying to do, is just bring it back to at least people's attention. Like I said, I'm not trying to be like the doomsday, like you talk about. I'm not that guy. Like, I'm not going to stop hunting. I love hunting. And I don't think it's going to be the end of hunting as we know it. But, you know, it's like I said, I'm in finance. I'm a nerd. I read a lot. I read this book, and Warren Buffett was talking about his mentor, and his advice to him when he started out in that industry, but I think it applies here. It doesn't matter whether or not people agree with you. It matters whether your logic and your reasoning is sound. And that's the way I look at this. It's like, no offense to anybody out there that's like, I don't care about it. It's like, I understand. You got to be able to separate facts from feelings. And the facts of the disease are, it has the potential to impact what we all enjoy. As I mentioned before, you like shooting big bucks, then you should probably be thinking about this a little bit, because it could very much impact the age structure of the deer in your area, right? So it'll be interesting. I agree with you. And I'm just going to try to make it my mission to at least bring the topic to people. I'm not trying to shove it down people's throats, but make them aware of the facts. Hopefully, you know, I've met with state senators. I'm trying to make it easier. I think the testing right now, it's too much of a pain for a lot of people. That's why they say, to heck with it. Like, I'm not going to deal with that. Make it easier. Because like I said, I feel like it's bubbling under the surface right now. And people will look at the numbers where they test, and they say, there's three deer that were shot in Eaton County, Michigan, that have it. But then I say, how many deer were tested? And of those deer that were tested, how many came off from the Wilson farm? Because Joe Wilson and all his brothers test every single deer, and nobody around him does. So like, your sample size sucks.
Statistics are interesting. Well, I tell you what, man, good conversation today. It's something that I don't think enough about. I know that, EHD is a little bit different. CWD is, I would say, a little more serious, as far as, cause that midge, like sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, you know, that plays a lot on weather. CWD doesn't seem to have maybe it does, a correlation to specific types of weather, and if dry weather make it worse or whatever the case is. But, you know, if it's something that concerns you, get your deer tested. If it doesn't, well, it doesn't. So, just every now and again, pop in, maybe some new research pops up, some new, information, or in the medical world, journals. There we go. Some new journals pop up with more information about CWD. Take a minute, maybe follow up on some things. It's not meant to like get anybody scared. It's just, hey, be aware of this, especially if one of your favorite animals is a white-tailed deer. So mule deer, you know, elk, whatever the case is. Joe Wilson, man. Huge shout out. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to hop on and do this podcast, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Last thing I'll tell everybody is, it's like, regardless of whether or not you think this is a big deal or not, try to shoot some more does. That's my personal plea for everybody. Try to make doe shooting fun. You know, last year, me and all my brothers, we went out together. We did some deer drives. I'm telling you, it was some of the most fun I've ever had hunting. And so let's make shooting does great again.
There you go. I want to make that a t-shirt, dude. Shoot more does. All right, dude. Hey, have a good one, and good luck this upcoming season.
Yeah, you as well, Dan. Thanks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.